All right, we got time for one more. Right here.
So I've been just enjoying this panel really a lot, and I've seen all of you personally, but a lot through the Merlefest years. And I was wondering if anybody wanted to talk about Doc Watson's influence on your playing and the festival itself, talking about going out into the parking lots and the campfires and some of the best jams and some of the best things I didn't think I would have ever seen before. Some of the gospel bands, but the bluegrass,
certainly
Sunday morning bluegrass. Just always looking forward to that.
Anybody
want to
jump in?
I've been to all the Merlefests other than the very first one, and they've done an awful lot of stuff right. You know, the Merlefest was started as a benefit for a garden. That's what it was, and it was a horticulturist who was trying to raise money, and it was suggested that because it was a garden for the blind that Doc would help out, so he did. And things went from there, and B. Towns, who's the horticulturist guy, was the festival head for many years, and it just got bigger and bigger, and Doc is an eclectic musician. He was, you know, a lot of people are surprised when they first hear that when he was discovered, he had one guitar. He was only allowed one guitar because he was on welfare. And it was a Les Paul, and he was playing rockabilly in a country bar on Saturday nights. And he just knew so many songs of all kinds. And then I was at a jam, Hootie and the Blowfish were going to be at the festival. So I was there before the festival, and Doc ran a jam with Hootie and the Blowfish. And a lot of the early days of Merlefest, they would just say, you, and you go on, you have a set. You know, they would just assign us. And those were completely spontaneous. You know, what do you want to do? Right on stage. And that has sort of yielded to the bands that are already rehearsed and they have a set they're going to do. But I'm still doing a set that I call the Flexigrass set that Jim's going to be on this year, where it's more like the total actual jam right on stage. And if there's something a little tricky, right in front of the people, it has to be explained, like, watch out for the thing that happens in the third verse or whatever. And to me, that's just as much a part of the music as hearing the professionals go at their rehearsed stuff. And it has a certain amount of extra life in it. The attitude comes back again because everybody's worried. Everybody doesn't know how it's going to come off. So everybody's trying extra hard and listening really hard. Whereas if you're in a band that plays a lot of the same stuff every weekend of the summer, if you don't watch it, you start phoning it in. And I didn't finish totally on the Chaka Khan thing. When I told her that you wouldn't find the money people there, she says, oh, that would be so refreshing. And I'm thinking, good, you know, you're richer than I am, but I got this.
Let's see, about Doc, yeah. Of course, quickly, my father was with Bill Monroe in 1963, and they play the Ash Grove. I've heard that talked about a lot because I'm sure that Jerry was there and Eric was there, and they played like a two-week stint, and Ralph Frenzler was the manager, and he brought along this fella that no one knew. He'd never been out west, and Bill Monroe didn't even really know him at all, and it was Doc. And he opened the shows, and he asked my dad, who was 24, if he would play the guitar with him. And my dad said, he's shy anyhow, but he said, I don't know any of your stuff. Doc said, I just play those old fiddle tunes. And he said, that's how I met Doc Watson. And he played with him for that whole week like that. And then skip ahead, you know, when we got into the band and later in the 90s, and we made a record with Doc. It was called Doc, Mac, and Dell, Mac Wiseman, my father, and Doc Watson. And that was an incredible time. We played a lot together back then. And he was a wonderful man, Doc Watson was. And a little tidbit, we played up in Maine not too long before he passed. And I was playing the Bill Monroe tune called Rawhide, and he got a kick out of that. You know, he liked that. He couldn't play fast anymore, but he wasn't on stage with us. He was coming on after us, and he gave me some really nice words about it. And I could always ask Doc about anything, you know. I remember I called Doc Watson and told him that John Hartford passed. And he gave me some great words over the phone about life. But he told me, you know, the older I get, he said, it's easier to hit the high notes and harder to hit the low notes. And I thought, most people, they lose the high notes and the lows are better. But it was the opposite for Doc. I thought I'd share that.
That's yours. That sounds like an optimist to me, right? That sounds like an optimist. Jim?
You know, one thing about Doc Watson is that, of course, he influenced all the acoustic guitar players, you know, that from Jerry's playing to Clarence and then Tony and everybody today. And just it's interesting to think that one man from this small community in North Carolina could have been such a huge influence in popular music. And talking about Merlefest, this festival where there's thousands of people and just impacting so many people from one man's style, his unique style. And he, even though, you know, sometimes he could play really fast and would, but whatever he played or sang, which sometimes seemed deceptively simple, his whole presence was there for every note. And there was a value that, and that was always a big lesson to me, singing or playing. It's like, it's got to, you know, have this energy, its own kind of energy to it. And he was like,